6690. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR. Have a safe and happy holiday weekend.
WJFF Jeffersonville.
From APM, this is Americans Reconnect, talking across the political divide. Our country is deeply divided. Families and communities are suffering big blow-ups over politics. But that's not the whole story. This hour, you'll hear everyday people who are having tough conversations about politics and social issues and succeeding. They're doing it in their families.
Working through this with Robin, I came to embrace it, that this is who Robin is.
And they're having important conversations in their communities.
This conflict, there's no one's going to win. I think the only way through is together.
People might say that's really naive, but I also think that, you know, this is how movements work.
Coming up, we'll hear stories that help us understand the political moment we're in and how to find our way through it. I'm Nina Moyney. Stay with us.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston.
United States and First Lady Melania Trump.
Military jets soared over the White House tonight as the nation pauses to mark Independence Day. A crowd of supporters, lawmakers, and invited guests gathered on the South Lawn, waving American flags as President Trump addressed them from a balcony.
You have the hottest country anywhere in the world, so that's the way it is, and that's the way we like it. And it's only going to get hotter, I promise you that. After that spectacular display of American power, let me just say that God bless the United States military and God bless the USA.
Trump is using the July 4th holiday to sign a massive tax cut and spending bill into law. The legislation pumps billions of dollars into national defense and enforcement at the southern border. It also slashes Medicaid and food assistance programs. Critics of the legislation say it will increase the national debt. Supporters say the bill will strengthen the country's economy. At least 13 people are dead and about 20 children are missing from a day camp after severe flooding swept across central Texas. Texas Public Radio's David Martin Davies reports emergency crews are scouring the Guadalupe River, where torrential rain triggered flash floods and dozens of water rescues.
A stalled weather system dumped over 10 inches of rain on parts of central Texas. This region is known as Flash Flood Alley, and there are reports of a wall of water hitting residential areas in Kerrville, not far from San Antonio, as well as campgrounds and RV parks that were full for the holiday. The city of Kerrville has activated its emergency management plan. Officials advise those near creeks, streams, and the Guadalupe River to immediately move to higher ground. For NPR News, I'm David Martin Davies in San Antonio.
A federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration from deporting 8 immigrants to South Sudan. Gustavo Sagrero of member station KUOW reports a prisoners' rights group has filed for an emergency restraining order.
The Seattle Clemency Project argues the federal government is intentionally trying to punish these men by sending them to South Sudan. It says punishing people in this way for immigration violations is unconstitutional and violates an 1896 Supreme Court ruling on the Chinese Exclusion Act. That ruling says immigrants can't be given a punishment without first being charged and tried in a court of law. The 8 men had either finished or were close to finishing sentences for various violent crimes. For the past 6 weeks, they've been held in a shipping container on a U.S. base in the African country of Djibouti. For NPR News, I'm Gustavo Sagrero in Seattle.
This is NPR News in Washington.
Radio Catskill isn't just your source of news and entertainment. It's a community hub.
You get to hear from people in the community through their own voices. Hearing it from the source is the best way to get the facts.
I listen to Radio Catskill because it's an indispensable source of local news, local culture, local music. It's really a glimpse into everything you need to know about the Catskills and the local area.
We love Radio Catskill. It gives a lot of great programming.
It's a forum for diverse voices, and we need you to keep this mission of public service going strong.
I listen to Radio Catskill because it's very informative, educational, and so many great people that are telling our stories locally.
I just think it's very fun and personable. I feel like Radio Catskill keeps all the tunes alive and I love all the coverage that you guys do for the schools as well.
I listen to Radio Catskill for the variety. I love the news, and I love all the different music programs that you offer. I love it all.
Your support funds local news, strengthens local culture, and keeps neighbors connected and informed.
You get information from your actual area, which is sometimes very hard to find out about.
I know what my neighbors are thinking about, what they care about. It means that I'm not just a person living in an area, I'm actually part of a community.
The news is good because I like local. I like to hear what's going on in my area. You don't hear that a lot from anyone else.
Your donation is more important than ever. We need to raise $55,000 by July 18th, and you can make it happen. Give now at WJFFradio.org. Thanks.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
From APM, this is Americans Reconnect, talking across the political divide. I'm your host, Nina Moyney. This hour, we bring you stories that help us understand the political moment we're in and how to find our way through it. You'll hear from Americans who are trying to have hard political conversations and succeeding. Some are trying to keep family relationships alive, like two cousins who grew up in devout Catholic families in Pennsylvania. They've had to navigate their differing views on abortion.
I'm sure there could have been plenty of other people in our family that could have blew up Christmas and it be ruined. But, you know, Kayla and I have a relationship that's not built on that.
Others hope that bridging divides can lead to bigger societal changes. We'll hear from a group of Minneapolis police officers and Black community members who traveled together to Alabama. The goal? To spend time together learning about slavery and the civil rights movement.
We can't cover it up. We can't ignore it. And the best way to heal some of those wounds is just simply to acknowledge it. And you have to just accept it, that it happened and it was wrong. And so this helps connect a lot of dots in my head and helps me to serve the community.
Make no mistake, this kind of work is seldom easy, especially around contentious topics like the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians.
So in some ways, I think that the work we're doing is in that spirit of like not staying silent and coming together when really society is encouraging us to like remain in our little insular communities.
We'll hear from a UC Berkeley expert on why it's important to talk to people we don't agree with.
Research suggests that when you really bridge with someone, the possibility of them changing and your changing goes up exponentially. So it's actually much more effective in terms of moving people.
We start with the story of a father and son and a disagreement over politics. The two men supported different candidates in the last couple presidential elections. Their political differences were driving a wedge between them, so they sought help from a therapist. Reporter Catherine Richard has the story.
You're about to eavesdrop on an intimate conversation between a father and son and the therapist they've tapped to help them work through some issues.
And so what happens when the two of you talk about politics?
How would you answer that, Dad?
I would answer it. It does stand sort of as a wall, and you can go around this side of the wall and talk. You can go around this side of the wall and talk. But when you're on opposite sides of that wall, it's like, let's just be happy that we're protected by the wall.
The dad, Andre Latandres, is 74 and conservative. He lives just a few minutes away from his son, and by many measures, they're very close.
I have to say to this day, and I truly mean it, that this guy sitting next to me here, I love him with all my heart, and I am so proud of him. And I tell people that he's the most amazing person I've ever met.
Andre voted for President Donald Trump twice, though he was initially a never Trumper. His son Chris is in his 40s and is a Democrat. He loves his dad dearly, but can't understand why he changed his mind about Trump. Chris hasn't felt comfortable asking.
It often feels like there's places in our relationship where we can't talk about things that deeply matter to us out of a fear of running into a landmine. And I don't want that to be true for the time that we have together.
The guy they've come to for help is Bill Doherty. He's not only a marriage and family therapist, he's also co-founder of a national organization that works to bridge political divides. It's called Braver Angels. Bill helped launch Braver Angels in 2016, and he says polarization has only gotten worse since then.
When we started out, we had to convince some people there was a problem. Now everybody knows there's a problem. The bad news is that the problem is worse. And that the polarization is deeper, the divide is wider. Now I'm hearing more than I did before about people divorcing over who they voted for, family cutoffs, a young man saying to his parents, "You're no longer my parents."
Bill is trying to help people overcome these dynamics. He says the stakes are high.
Well, if we can't talk about our common life, our public affairs, we lose our democracy.
One of Bill Doherty's first questions to Chris and Andre is about how the rift between them started. Andre says it dates back to when Chris moved to Washington, D.C. and eventually worked for the Obama administration.
We had at least one or more encounters where I was quite surprised that he was in a place so different from me.
He had become more liberal?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay.
As they talk with Bill, it quickly becomes clear both father and son have been harboring some resentments. Chris recalls the time his dad said he had been brainwashed by liberal Christian thinkers.
Like, really? They're brainwashing me at a Christian college?
And Andre remembers feeling insulted when Chris made a snarky remark about a book he was reading.
His statement was, "He's a bad historian. You shouldn't be reading that book."
Bill coaches them on how to navigate those moments.
So my recommendation is stay in the curious zone. You sort of went out of it a little bit there afterwards and said, "Well, I think we're both strong, you know, so stay in the zone."
They spend more than 30 minutes rehashing old slights. There's no mention of President Donald Trump. But Bill says all the interpersonal stuff is relevant to the way Andre and Chris relate to each other when it comes to politics. Eventually, the conversation does turn to Trump. Chris struggles to pose a question to his dad in a non-judgmental way.
Just as a practical point, here's what I'm struggling with a little bit. I feel like the most open-minded, open-hearted, curious approach to that question would be to look my dad in the eyes and say, "How did you come to voting for Trump for a second time?" What I want to do is launch into a big preamble of how is it possible that as an American, as a Christian,
Well, you're not going to do it here, though.
No.
But you feel like it.
Yeah, he's talking about this is how he wants to approach it. That's how you feel.
Bill interrupts Chris. Going on the attack isn't helpful, and Chris knows this. After a few minutes, he asks a more neutral question, and his dad explains that he came to see some of Trump's more outrageous statements as kind of an act.
As I observed Trump over time, I realized that he had a persona, something he puts on.
Andre goes on to reveal something he says he hasn't really discussed openly before.
I will go to my grave believing the 2020 election was stolen.
The father and son reflect back on what they hear each other saying, and the conversation ends amicably. For Chris, the conversation with his dad and the therapist was revelatory, especially the part where his dad said the 2020 election was stolen, a claim rejected by dozens of judges across the political spectrum.
Had he shared that with me, with Bill not sitting there, I probably would have immediately launched into, "How could you possibly believe that?" Without any, frankly, without any interest in his response. I can at least enter a space where I say, "Gosh, if I believed that to be true, how might that affect my politics?"
But that was last November, before Trump took office, and before he issued dozens of executive orders. Given the big changes, we wanted to know if the Latondresses were still talking about their political disagreements.
"Guys, what are you up to? What are you playing?"
On a recent afternoon at Chris Latondress's house, his young sons were at war playing Minecraft.
"We're making a war and we're going to play against each other."
Meanwhile, Chris and his dad Andre were chatting about the news. And it wasn't going off the rails. They say the therapy session had made it possible for them to talk about politics.
"Obviously, I think it did crack a door open for us, or give us a path around the wall to meet at some clearing.
It's safe to talk about. We can talk about it safely."
Chris says he's felt comfortable telling his dad when Trump's actions upset him, like when he learned that programs affecting his work were on the chopping block. Chris runs a nonprofit focused on affordable housing.
On March 6, I texted my dad. Altogether, what this adds up to is an administration that is dismantling brick by brick nearly everything your son has given his life's work to. And my dad, to his credit, responded, "I'm grieved if this is true."
Andre's trying to take a wait-and-see approach, but he's worried that cutting housing assistance and foreign aid in particular could cause harm.
I do have concerns that in the process of restructuring that and getting rid of stuff that is anywhere from fraudulent to just wasteful, not do damage to the stuff that's important and valuable. And I spend no small amount of time praying about that for wisdom for the people that are going to make those decisions.
Andre and Chris still see the world very differently, but they say they're committed to staying in a relationship and having honest conversations. Chris says he remains deeply alarmed by the direction of the country, but he also thinks talking respectfully about even the deepest disagreements is more important now than ever.
That's Catherine Richard. She spent the last year reporting on polarization and how to overcome it through a project called Talking Sense. This is Americans Reconnect, talking across the political divide. I'm Nina Moyney. The therapist we just heard from, Bill Doherty, as Catherine mentioned, Bill's co-founder of Braver Angels, which helps people bridge political differences through things like workshops and debates. Bill told me there are a lot of dynamics feeding polarization today. For one thing, there's the media we consume.
Polarization started to rise dramatically about 40 years ago in this country, but social media just accelerated it. Other things are so many media outlets that kind of specialize politically, people getting their news feeds to fit their already existing biases. So we live in a different information universe now from one another.
And, you know, people are certainly louder than ever on social media, it seems. But I'm curious to know, is it harder to get people to want to have conversations across political differences in this current environment, maybe face to face?
I think it is harder now. What we call blues, people more liberal, have always been more interested in these conversations than reds. But there are a number of blues now who are having a crisis of confidence, if you will, in trying to reach out across the divide. So that's a shift since the last election. But people see the thing, people can't get to Trump himself or any political leader, but they can get to their friends and family. Hmm. And this is, I think, really troubling to me.
Braver Angels does work across the country. When people are they showing up alone and talking with people they don't know? Or are you seeing people show up as families and saying, help us? Because it can be more difficult, right, to have these types of conversations with the people closest to us.
They don't show up as families.
Okay, that's wishful thinking.
Maybe. That's wishful thinking. Uncle Fred, would you like to come to this thing with me? No, they come as individuals. So we have a workshop called Families in Politics, and people come as individuals, and they learn to deal better with people who we call the family gladiator, you know, or the defender or the sniper or whatever. We have a little humor with this. And so how do you bring yourself differently? And so part of what we teach people is don't try to change them, but, you know, protect your boundaries. And then if you want to engage, how do you engage? Because behind every passionate political belief, there's a story. If you can get to the story, it humanizes the person for you.
John A. Powell has thought a lot about this phenomenon. He's director of the Othering and Belonging Institute. It's at the University of California, Berkeley. And Powell says the stories we tell about each other really matter. Some of those stories are what he calls breaking stories, which demonize other people.
You're putting some people into a category to say they're less than, they don't fully belong, they don't count, they don't matter as much. Maybe they're not even people. The way you do that is through something called breaking.
And breaking, like the term suggests, is a practice where you tell stories, you reduce people to single dimensions. All of us are complex. It's like the only thing I care about this person is that they're a Hindu or that they're black or that they're white. I'm not interested in what their aspirations are. And so we engage in practices and stories about the other. And those stories are denigrating.
Powell says the opposite of breaking stories are bridging stories.
We can't actually engage that person, that group, to listen to them, to hear them, to engage in what's called empathetic listening. And we find when we do that, that we can connect with them. We have more in common than we have difference. And that's called bridging. The research suggests that when you really bridge with someone, the possibility of them changing and your changing goes up exponentially. So it's actually much more effective in terms of moving people. But if the purpose of bridging is to move people, it's not really bridging in a deep way. But when you really see someone, something happens.
It might be hard to imagine people having bridging conversations around a topic as contentious as abortion. For some people, reproductive rights are absolute. For others, the sanctity of life is absolute. So how do you find common ground? Annie Baxter has that story.
Kayla Myers distinctly remembers the chaos of growing up in Pennsylvania alongside lots of cousins, specifically girl cousins.
It's just like a big, noisy family. And so Christmas was always just all of us in Grandma and Pop's basement and just like wrapping paper chaos.
Like her cousins, Kayla was a pretty devout Catholic. She went to Mass regularly and took part in the March for Life. That's the annual anti-abortion rights march in Washington, D.C. But by college, Kayla was having doubts about everything.
In some ways, my relationship with my views on abortion has evolved completely in tandem with my relationship with organized religion. And so I think when one shook, the other shook inherently.
Kayla came to believe that the decision about whether to end a pregnancy should be up to a woman and her doctor. And one particular statistic really shaped her view. 6 in 10 women seeking abortions have had at least one other child, so there are likely other children at home. That really resonated with her when she became a mom herself and suffered from postpartum depression.
I now know that it's just so complex. It's such a difficult thing. It is very, very hard to navigate being pregnant, having children, and being postpartum.
Kayla now lives in a Minneapolis suburb and fully supports abortion rights. On paper, at least, this puts her at odds with one of those girl cousins she was so tight with growing up, Tori LaBelle. Here's Tori.
My pro-life opinion is that regardless of a woman's situation or any prenatal diagnosis, that every person has dignity at the moment of fertilization and the gift of life deserves to be protected.
Tori learned that she and her cousin Kayla were no longer seeing things the same way about a decade ago. It was Christmas, the usual raucous scene at the grandparents' house. And that year, some of the girl cousins' gifts to each other were donations to a favorite charity. Tori opened her envelope, and she saw that Kayla had donated to Planned Parenthood in all of her cousins' names.
And I was like, okay, this is how I know. You know, meanwhile, I'm studying religion at a Catholic university, you know, and like, I'm sure there could have been plenty of other people in our family that could have blew up Christmas and it be ruined. But, you know, Kayla and I have a relationship that's not built on that.
Tori lives in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And unlike Kayla, who's moved away from the Catholic Church, Tori has leaned in. She's the director of family ministry at a Catholic church.
Everyone in Louisiana, the number one question is, where do you go to church? You know, who's your mama? Who's your daddy? Where do you go to church? Like, that's classic.
And opposition to abortion is a big part of life there, too. Tori takes high school students to the March for Life, and she's participated in prayer vigils outside abortion clinics. Tori says she and her cousin look like they're on opposite sides of this issue, but what keeps them connected is all the places where they overlap.
Kayla and I completely agree. We look at a woman in a crisis pregnancy and who's thinking of choosing abortion, and we're saying, I am so sorry you're in this spot. I wished you could be in a spot where taking on kids was a joy and you had community support and support from your family and support from society and your government, and you were able to afford all those things.
Like Kayla, Tori says having children herself deepened her sense of empathy for women who already have kids and are considering abortion. She says those women get the kind of selflessness parenting requires.
Anybody who's had to wake up at 2 a.m. and then 2:15 and then 2:20, yes, you are dying to yourself for your child. You're saying what I want right now or what I need, physical need, sleep, is being denied to care for this child. And to know that there are mothers who have done that and say, I can't sacrifice anymore, that hurts so bad, because it's not because women are selfish that they choose abortion. It's not. They are backed into a corner.
Tori and Kayla talk about these issues a lot. They regularly check in with each other, especially when they know that a news development could be hard on the other person. That happened when the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade in 2022. Tori, the abortion opponent in Louisiana, was relieved. Kayla, the Minnesotan who supports abortion rights, was gutted. But they leaned on each other to talk about what needed to come next. Here's Tori again.
Affordable health care, affordable child care, you know, paid parental leave for mothers and fathers, lots of government programs, but also nonprofit support, too. It needs to be community and the state, and I'll take federal level, you know, involvement in this support here.
Hearing Tori say, like, I hear the responsibility that comes with this Supreme Court decision, because there's about to be babies in this world. They are going to be born in situations where parents would have said, I can't have a child in this moment. And so I appreciated that, like, someone was seeing it, because it, like, comes back to remembering that this isn't a sport. Like, this disagreement isn't sport. It's not Vikings Packers. It is people's lives.
Both cousins say the way abortion gets talked about politically washes over a lot of nuance and pits people against each other. They reject that frame. Here's Kayla again.
For me personally, having been someone who was mourning the lives of the unborn, I can hold a lot of compassion for that feeling. You know, whether you're mourning the loss of life in utero, or you're mourning the loss of life for people who are seeking reproductive care, or you're mourning the loss of choice for people who are seeking care and seeking, you know, a say in their lives, it's a hard, devastating topic. And I think always coming back to that and saying, like, you're sad. You're sad. I'm sad. We're sad. And we're not going to unsad this.
But Kayla says she and her cousin are trying to figure out how to get through it together.
That's reporter Annie Baxter. This is Americans Reconnect, talking across the political divide. I'm Nina Moyney. Later this hour, we'll hear from people who are trying to make big changes in their communities by bridging differences. But first, we have one more story about what that looks like in a family relationship, where there's often an expectation that other family members will share the same views and values. That was the case for John Curley and his daughter, Robin. The two of them have a close relationship. They love playing music together.
All the changes we've been through.
But there was a period when things were less harmonious between them. It started when Robin sent her dad an email telling him she's gay. Her dad is a conservative Christian. Catherine Richards sat down with the Curleys, and they explained the turn that their relationship took after that life-changing note.
So, John, I want to know what your reaction was when you got that email, and what's happening in your head at this point.
I was deeply hurt. And I went through all of the periods of grief. There was denial, bargaining, anger. And I remember taking a long walk down on the river and just crying out and crying
bitterly over this. I was raised in the Presbyterian Church, family of four boys. My brother Paul would always chide me and mock me as a Sterling, Colorado, Logan County Presbyterian, conservative, Republican, Rotarian businessman. You know,
you pretty much check all the-